What's up, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of Why Are We Here? I'm your host, Spencer Crandall. This is season two. We made it. We are at season two. If you haven't checked out season one, you can go back. I think there's like nine episodes. Nine episodes. So go check them out. Love season one. And here we are, season two. I thought, what is a better way to kick off season two than to talk with the people who gave me birth and life and a roof over my head and so many things. So here with me today are my parents, Rusty and Sherry Crandall. Parents, what's up?
Hey.
Good morning.
Hi, parents.
Good morning. How are
you? You know, I'm good.
This is fun.
This is already fun.
It's already fun.
How trippy is it that your son is interviewing you on a podcast? Does that feel like a weird full circle moment?
It feels normal just because it's you and it's not trippy. It's fun. Yeah.
Good.
I love what you're doing. I think your podcast is awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. It's been fun. And I usually start most podcasts with kind of like the how we met story. But it's not.
That's a beautiful day, how we met.
Well, take me through the day I was born. Go ahead. Hit it.
Oh, goodness. It was kind of a long day. You just were stubborn and wanting to enter the world.
In a difficult way.
In a difficult way. But, oh my gosh, you were born in December, and we brought you home in a Christmas stocking.
That's adorable. I've seen that picture.
Yeah.
Like, what a cute way to bring a baby home with a little stocking.
Yeah. Oh.
So I was cute off the bat.
You were.
I was difficult off the bat. This is all checking out in my right. head.
Yeah.
You were talking immediately.
Was I? That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Immediately, trying to communicate. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so that's how we met, which is great. I would love for you guys to tell kind of from your perspective how you guys met. Because I have an idea in my head of the story, but obviously I won't spoil anything. Go ahead. From your perspective, what is your like meeting / falling in love story in, you know, whatever version you'd like to tell?
Oh, goodness. You want to start?
Sure.
Okay.
So our families knew each other when we were really little kids, like 9 and 5. So we went to the same church. My sister was her Sunday school teacher.
I didn't know that for so long. And that's the trippiest piece of information that my Aunt Cindy would like, because she's what, 12 years old or something like that?
Or 14 years.
14 years. So like she's a teenager and you're a little kid. And so you're being dropped off at Sunday school with my aunt.
Isn't that wild?
Yes, it's very wild.
Yeah. So we obviously weren't dating when we were 9 and 5,
but our
families knew each other. We moved to the other side of town, so we didn't see them then again for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of ran into each other when we were in high school, college.
Yeah.
Started
dating
again.
You guys went to the same high school?
We did.
Not at the same time.
Mm-hmm. He's older. Just to clarify.
Mom really likes everyone to know.
And so we started dating in college and got married after that. But we've known each other and our families since we were little kids.
Yeah, the story I always think of is my dad's dad would kidnap my mom's sister. This is real. I can't make this up. From Sunday school again. So they all went to the same church. And my dad's dad, so my grandfather, would pick up my Aunt Kim, which is not his daughter. It's my mom's sister.
Right.
So a different family.
Yeah.
He would pick her up and basically, very different time. You cannot do this now. Pick her up from Sunday school and basically hold her hostage and say, if you want your kid, you got to come have Sunday brunch with us or lunch and we're going to make a pie. And like your families would get together and you would just be hanging out. And the thought of like you guys getting married and then procreating and having me, like all of that from that. It's just wild. I don't know a lot of people that have that story, especially as far back as you guys do. It's pretty wild.
I actually remember seeing him again. Like we knew we went to his sister's wedding, but again, Christy.
Okay.
And Cindy. So we kind of always stayed connected. But I remember then being an older teenager and another kind of weird connection. So my grandpa was very involved with like music as well. And so is Rusty's brother, Randy.
Yeah.
And so he was helping Randy put together a band, and there were these auditions, and I decided to just show up after gymnastics practice, and Rusty came in, and he was playing football at Nebraska, and he was so adorable. He walked in the door, and I was like, whoa, he's so cute.
He's not 9 years old anymore.
Yeah, and I remember to this day that I called my best friend, Marion, and I said, Rusty Crandall is so fine.
Cool. You just tell everyone how old you are right there. Yeah,
I know. With one word. Just by saying he's so fine. He is so fine.
He is
you
so
You can tell by the way I use my wife. Hey, that was a good sign.
I know. That's. I knew you were going to say that.
But so you have a picture behind you of him playing football. I mean,
it's a podcast, so you may or may not be watching on YouTube. Right. But there's a picture that we keep on our little setup here that I've had in my room for like 10 years. It's my dad playing football at Wasson, actually, in high school.
So I just remember that day, and I was like, And then I used to babysit his niece and nephew, and that's how we started talking and getting to know each other.
Zach and...
Chad and Lindsay. Yeah, your cousins.
Yeah.
So anyway,
our families are so weirdly tied together. It's so crazy because every once in a while... get both sides of the family together. There's a couple people there. And they're talking like they've known each other for their whole lives. And then I realize they have.
Yeah.
Like my aunts and my aunts actually grew up together, babysat each other's kids. And that's really cool. I didn't know the band story. I've asked you this. This is why I wanted to have you guys on. Because I'm like, different information will come out on the pod. I never knew the Baba and Randy audition story.
Yes.
That's pretty wild.
It's awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
What did you guys want to be when you grew up as kids? Like, what was your big, like, if I could do anything kind of thing?
When I was really little, I wanted to be in the Olympics because that was my whole life was gymnastics. Mm-hmm. And again, my friend and I, we did like a pinky swear, like we would never have a boyfriend. We would just train and, you know, be in the Olympics. And so that's when I was real little. And then I wanted to be like a news anchor. When I got a little bit older.
I could see that. You're a great communicator. You could have definitely done that. Mm-hmm. Dad?
I always liked like heavy equipment when I saw it, so I was going to like run a backhoe or something.
Were you the kid that like always played with trucks?
Oh, yeah.
That checks out.
That makes really me checks giggle.
So, like, I'm going to drive one of those backhoes one of these days.
I mean, you're in the industry. Yeah. You're in home building, you at least like tell the backhoes what to do, or sign the paper.
They just wouldn't want me operating one.
Rusty, you're not allowed to operate, but you can watch your dream come true. That's really funny. I didn't know that.
That's adorable.
What was I like as a kid? Like, describe a young Spenny Cran.
Oh, Spencer, you have been fun since you were a baby. You had this, like, contagious giggle and silly faces. Like, we would make this face. We'd say, make your silly face, and you would just do these silly faces. When you would smile for pictures, you always had your tongue out. Like, you were very dramatic and... So as like a baby, you were very happy. You were also very stubborn as like a toddler, as you got to be 2 and 3, like very strong-willed. And I think it's hard to parent when you're little, but it's also an amazing trait because I think that's why you've been so successful. Because
thank you.
You have like that the determination. But you just have always brought so much joy. You're just fun. You've always been since you were little and happy.
Appreciate that. All the pictures that I look back on, it's like cousins, siblings, friends, normal smile. And I had to like double peace signs, rock and roll. Like everything was so dramatic since I was a child. And I like kind of knew that. But we over last Christmas or something, we're going through all these pictures. I'm like, I have maybe 3 regular pictures where I'm just smiling. I'm always air guitar, jump, hide my face. Like I was always laying in the middle doing like a Sports Illustrated pose, trying to be funny.
Totally.
I was always that kid.
You were an entertainer from the time you were like 3.
Yeah. Dad?
Yeah, you always had to entertain all the families when we got together from day one. So smiley, laughing all the time, very extroverted. leader of the pack with your friends, but just loved to laugh and have fun. But yeah, very outgoing and always entertaining from day one.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. That's cool. That's good to hear. It's fun that like certain things change as you get older and certain things stay the same. You know, like I think my entertainee, maybe it's just in a, you know, a need for approval or whatever, but it's, it has stayed. I'd love to make people laugh and I love to talk and I love to entertain people. And what is like something that is the exact same from when I was little? And what's something that you feel like has changed pretty dramatically? Or you're like, you know, you used to be this way, but as you've gotten older, you're this way.
That's a good question. I think so much of you is the same. Like at shows, some of your fans will be like, is there a stage Spencer and then like Spencer? Because they, I think they have a hard time believing you're truly that happy and outgoing and things. And you are. And I always say, no, I mean, this is the same kid that is just a bigger version of the three-year-old. Mm-hmm. You know, you would stand on the fireplace and very dramatically deliver poetry or songs. So I think that's the same.
Yeah.
I think in some ways you've become more serious as you've gotten older, even though you're still fun.
Yeah.
I think you're a very deep thinker. And so I think you've become a little more serious and introspective as you've gotten a little bit older. But the real, like, just sweet, fun, outgoing person, you're just the same, just a bigger version.
Yeah. Anything to add?
I think the drive, I mean, you're very driven. That obviously comes with age and maturity, but I mean, I think that's the biggest difference is you have all those other traits, but they're combined with this drive to succeed. Yeah. Mm.
Well, thanks. I get it from you too. It's fun to watch, like, I've watched you guys build this family, build this life. And so that is the example that I have is like, I always felt like I could chase the biggest, craziest dream, you know, like that, what a gift that is. I feel, super privileged that I just had the parents that I had. I was born in the time that I was. I'm a straight white male born in America to the parents that I have with the education that I have, especially with everything going on in the world right now. It's like really makes you feel just super lucky that like we had what we had. I have just a weird question because I saw it online the other day. I was like, I have to ask my parents this. What was my name if I was a girl?
Ashley.
Ashley? Ashley Crandall. Okay. It's not terrible. It'll do.
You know, when you're first dating or you get married and you think, oh, I want to have like two kids and Justin and Ashley. And so your older brother's Justin.
I have Justin as an older brother. I have a cousin named Ashley. Mm-hmm. So did Chrissy steal the name?
No, because Lexi's older. But it was interesting when we started to adopt, all of a sudden, I know this sounds weird, but Ashley just didn't seem like the right fit.
Yeah.
So Alexa. Mm.
What is like, we haven't necessarily talked about that a ton in my life of like, what was that process like of like, for those of you who don't know, my little sister is adopted from China and, like you made that decision at one point in your life that like, you know, we have three kids, but we'd really like another kid. And I think we want to adopt a child from China. And so take me through that process. Like, what is that like then, you know, actually going over to China and holding her for the first time and all that stuff? Mm,
gosh, you're just trying to get me to cry on this show, aren't you?
Well, you know, we'll keep a counter in the top right corner.
I think for me, it started, we attended the same friend I keep referring to, Marion. She's been my friend since kindergarten. Mm-hmm. We still talk every day. And her parents were celebrating their 50-year anniversary. And we went to this party, and there was this really sweet family, and they had adopted a little girl from China. Mm. And I had thought about it over the years. My grandpa had lived in China as a young man for like 9 years of his life. So China was like a special place in my family. We talked about it a lot growing up.
Yeah.
So as the need became like more apparent that these girls needed homes, on the way home from that party, I remember where we were on the highway, and I just said to your dad, I was like, would you ever consider doing that? And he looked over at me, he's driving, and he's like, yeah, I would. And I was like, oh my gosh. And so right away the next day I just started, you know, I'm a researcher, so I wanted to get all the information I could. And so we just started really thinking about it and praying about it. We told our best friends and we didn't tell anybody else because we wanted to make that decision on our own and we didn't want people to weigh in on it. Mm-hmm. We wanted to be really solid in the decision. And yeah, what do you want to add? Can you?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's such a special thing that in our family, you know, my little sister is like such a light in our all of our lives. And, you know, you make these decisions in your life. And at the time, it's like, yeah, maybe we'll do that. And now I always say this, like, I can't imagine our lives without Lexi. You know, she's such a staple and big part of what the Crandall family is. And I think part of our closeness was that decision, is you guys going over there and bringing back Lexi. And like from the time we saw her in the airport to now, like we've all been inseparable. And I think that is, it's a big part of like tying us together as brothers. It was a big part of, I think, us coming together as a family is like, the three of us were old enough, you know, Justin maybe remembers Taylor being born, but like I don't.
Yeah.
So I think Lexi's the first time that we all had enough consciousness to be like, oh, this is another human joining our family. And so I think we all rallied around that and like, you know, she's spoiled all hell because of it, but she's such a light in our family. And what was it like? I mean, obviously you guys went to China. We did not. I was like eight or something. Like you meeting your daughter for the first time, obviously such a different way to meet your kid. There's one way, which is like you birthed that child. And so you're holding that child for the first time. The other, you had seen pictures. You had, you know, gone through. It's a very different process. There's so much paperwork and there's so much interviewing and there's so much travel and it's very different. Like maybe touch on that.
It was 18 months of paperwork, a lot of paperwork. And at the time it was SARS. And so I just thought, oh my goodness, we're never going to be able to go. And I would every day check on, there was this China like travel site that all of us who were adoptive parents were on. And I was very attached to any news that would come in. And finally, your dad was like, stay off of the computer because my whole emotional state was, you know, dictated by this website. So it was a lot of paperwork. And really, it just was waiting, you know?
Yeah.
I just believed it was God's timing when we were supposed to get her. And I want to just go back just a little bit. When you were little, you would learn something at church about like orphans. And so you had this heart for them and you would pray how you could help orphans around the world. And one night at the dinner table, like that's what you like, dear Lord, I just pray that we can help the orphans. Well, meanwhile, we'd been talking about,
about
it.
Adoption, so we're like, not telling us.
What? You know, we're kind of opening our eyes like, was he listening to what we were saying?
That's wild.
So the night that we told you that we were going to do this, we sat you guys down and
I weirdly,
do you remember
maybe this
that?
Is like me, you know how like you can't tell what's a dream or what's like reality. Yeah. I do weirdly remember this moment.
Yeah.
Were we in the living room of the West White Oak Street house? Yeah.
And you started jumping up and down on the couch like we had just told you, you won $1 million. You were so excited. Mm-hmm. And when we got to the airport, and then we'll tell you a little bit about China, but when we got to the airport at Denver at DIA, you take this long escalator, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there used to be this fountain area. And you guys were standing there. And my sister had helped you make these T-shirts, if you remember. And it was like, Lexi's big brother, Lexi's bigger brother, Lexi's biggest brother. And you had made this poster. Oh, my gosh. And it was like, Lexi, it's me, Spencer. And you were holding it over your head.
With an arrow pointing down to you.
Yo, it's me. Like, she's going to be like, yo.
Spence, what's up?
And, what up?
That's but so it was good. So sweet. You were just over the moon excited about her.
Yeah.
And my dad's always said that she's the cherry on top. And she really is.
She is.
Yeah.
Yeah, she is. She's special. Special, special kid.
Absolutely. Yeah. What is, you know, I feel like there are things as parents, as you get older and your kids get older, you now have like adult children, which is interesting. You know, you go from
it's crazy
holding Lexi in an orphanage to like helping her pack for college or whatever this last week or two weeks ago. What are some things that you guys feel really, really proud of? And then what are some stuff or some stuff? What are some things looking back that you're like, you know, I wish we did a little bit more of this or a little less of this, like with hindsight? What does that look like? The stuff that you're really proud of and the stuff that you're like, oh, maybe we would have done that differently.
I mean, I think we're proud that they're all very independent children, confident. They're all willing and able to travel anywhere, move anywhere. We didn't grow up that way, so it was very difficult for us. So.
That's true. I never really thought about that. So you said that, like, all of us have kind of gone off and done traveling and all that stuff. That's interesting. Right.
So, and they're all very confident in doing that, which is what was one of our goals. And so we're very proud of that.
Nice.
You're all great people, not just kids, but you're great people. Very caring.
Yeah, I love that you're all independent and, again, sometimes hard to parent when you're little, but I also wanted that because I'm also very like fiercely independent. Yeah. And, I wanted that for my kids to like, I wanted you to believe you could do anything that you put your mind to and the effort and the hard work. And you're doing that and all of you in different ways and with different things. And I love that you're each, a Crandall, but yet you're super individual. So there isn't like a cookie cutter version of like a Crandall kid. Sometimes you see families
all very different.
Yeah, that are just all the same because that's kind of what they were told they had to be. And I love that you're all not the same.
Yeah.
It's really, and again, so can be hard to parent or to like interact sometimes, you know, because there's big feelings everywhere. but at the same time, that's just really, to me, that's great because you're comfortable in who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think on the flip side, you always look back and go, I wish we would have done this or that. I mean, we didn't want entitled children, but you're probably more spoiled than we'd like, all of you. And we want you to earn your way through life. So you have to learn that, right?
Yeah.
So it's a fine line to walk when you're raising kids. You want to give them whatever you can. You want to make their life comfortable, but you also want them to get this work ethic and this desire and, you know, make their own life and make their own way. So we probably went overboard on giving too much, but I mean, not in a big way, but that's just always things you're always wondering. Did I do too much? Did I make them work hard enough for this or that? That's probably the only thing that I always wonder about.
Well, and that's a conversation we've had before, which I think is such a tricky part. And
it is.
Here's why it's such a weird cookie to bite into, because there's so many weird things baked into it, right? You guys grew up, especially you, Dad, like your dad passed away at a young age, and you had a very different upbringing than what we had. So there's this pendulum, right? Like, I didn't have a lot, so I want to give my kids everything I never had. And the reason that you had that drive is because you had adversity. Right. So then you give your kids all the things, and then how much adversity do they face because they have all the things? Now, I think you guys did a really great job. And I actually, one, I don't think there's anything as such thing as like perfect parenting, but I think you guys are damn near close. And I think although we had a lot, I never felt like anything was just like expected. Like when we got a car, it's because we had good grades. When we got Pokemon cards, because we did all our chores, you know, even though that sounds silly, I do think that was built into it. And I think your allowance of us to chase dreams and to do activities that we really liked, I think is where we all have our drive from now, because it actually comes from passion, which is a cool place that, you know, there's a weird thing that I've noticed, especially on the internet nowadays, where like people kind of get mad at generational wealth, but it's only on like the side that you guys are on where like you built it, but nobody really realizes that you're the first people in your family to come from nothing. Dad painting billboards to get through college, mom working at the Dairy Queen or whatever to save up money to go see dad on the weekends. You guys didn't have a lot of money. You know, obviously I wrote a song called Kept Every Vow, and it's like you're saving pennies for the life you wanted. And that was real. So now you have opportunities. and maybe some money to help your kids. And I think some people rub against that and they're like, oh, don't just give them everything. And you're like, well, that's kind of the point of why we worked so hard. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the weirdest parts of, or what I anticipate to be one of the weirdest parts of being a parent is, where do we give and where do we make them earn? Because you also don't want to be the parent who's like, you want toothpaste? You got to go grind,
you gotta
son.
You got to go make it yourself.
Yeah. Like, all right, I guess my parents still love me. You know, there's this fine line.
Yeah, it is a balance. In fact, I told Mom the other day, I read this article, and it was, I think it was the Prince of Dubai, maybe, that said this. But he, you know, kind of relates to this. He said, my grandfather rode a camel. Mm-hmm. My father rode a camel. Now I drive a Mercedes. My son drives a Land Rover. His cousin drives a Land Rover. But my grandkids will ride camels again.
Whoa.
And it's that's that, trippy. It's exactly what we're talking about. They become so entitled. They become lazy. They become, you know, everything's given to them, and then it collapses. And so mm-hmm. I just thought that was a very interesting comment.
It's a great way to visualize it.
Right.
Because my mm-hmm. biggest fear, honestly, you know, one of my big dreams in life is to have a family and to have kids. Mm-hmm. And to do that well, especially like let's project my biggest dreams come true, and I am playing a stadium. With that is a very different life than what you guys were growing up into.
Sure.
And, you know, let's say again, everything happens the way I want, and it's like unlimited opportunity for me and my family, which is amazing and what you think you want. But in that, I will have to be so intentional about this exact conversation, which is, okay, my kids, everywhere they go, like I listen to a podcast called Armchair Expert, and Dax Shepard's talking about his kids showing up on set, and they don't let them do that anymore because they get treated differently for no reason. He's like, I don't want to set that precedent that my kids walk in somewhere and they're special because I'm special or because of the work that I've done or because, you know, I'm number one on the call sheet that somebody would go, hey, what can we do? You know, jumping through hoops. There has to be some normalcy. There has to be some like adversity and where to build that in. And then also, yeah, I've worked so hard. Like I want my kids to come backstage at a cool concert. I want them to meet their heroes, or I want to get them a car on their 16th birthday. Some of these things that you dream about doing for your kids. So it'll be interesting.
Well, it starts with awareness, and then you can be intentional if you're aware. You'll never be perfect, but you'll find some middle ground. It's the people that are completely clueless about what they're doing that are dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tension to manage, right? Because you do want to be able to, the things that you've worked so hard for, you want to lavishly love your children, but you want to be mindful and aware of where's the line of loving well and then spoiling rotten, right? Like, so there is a line that you can cross.
That is the line. That's really, that's
good.
And
you don't want to do that.
Yeah. What, you know, I'm going to rephrase this into, I think a really cool part of this podcast and something I think about all the time, especially with the internet, is like, and a big reason I wanted to have you guys on today is because this kind of makes this conversation immortal. Like, you know, your great, 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 great grandkids could be watching this and be like, holy shit. Like, look at those microphones. They look so weird, you know, like that's wild.
Yeah.
And there's a good chance that my kids are going to watch this. I'm their dad at, you know, 26, and maybe they're 26 watching this, which will be super trippy. What up, bitches? that kills my mom that said that. I think it'll be funny to them. Hopefully they're funny and not weird. But like, if you really think about that, what would you tell your grandkids? What is like a message, or, you know, they're watching. So what would you say or give like a piece of advice or speak to them?
Well, I always think everybody leaves a legacy, and it's up to you what it's going to be. So Daddy and I tried from the time we knew we were having kids, like what did we want our kids to grow up? We want you to know that you're loved beyond measure, right? And so I would just hope that like that legacy of love gets built and that they feel like they came from love and not from things, but they came from like really great interactions and people who love and supported you and gave each other grace when things were really hard. And that would be the legacy of our family, that our grandkids and great grandkids like they might look at this picture and go, oh my gosh, I look like grandpa or whatever that is. And we might not get the chance to know them, but that they were part of the love legacy.
Yeah. Well, and they come from you guys like building that life to give us a life, to give them a life. Yeah. Like, that's a really cool thing.
I think living life with a sense of urgency is critical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's so fast. You don't realize that when you're young. But whatever you're doing, whether it's business or whether it's loving mm-hmm. people or whether it's charity or whatever inspires you in life, mm-hmm. you have to do it with a sense of urgency because life goes by so fast. And, you know, you start to see that as you get older. Like when you're in high school, it seemed like every day was forever, right? Yeah.
Those summers in high school, you're like, when is it going to end?
And then you get older and all of a sudden the weeks and months click by and then the years click by and then the decades click by. And so as you get older, that's one of the things you learn is you need to learn life or live life with a real sense of urgency.
Yeah. And I've always felt that from you guys. I felt like you both had this need to move forward and do things like it was really cool. But I think going back to mom's legacy thing, what I love about our family is when I think about us, we are adventuring. Mm-hmm. Like that's something I really want to bring into my family is like, I remember there was some Friday, like almost summer break, and you guys came and just took us out of school. Like we went for like 2 hours or whatever to say that we did. And then you took us out of school and we just like went camping with the Stanleys mm-hmm. for the weekend. Like that to me is the quintessential Crandall family is like adventurous spirit, asking big questions, hanging out together, enjoying quality time together and making memories. I think you guys put way more stock and investment into experiences over, things, cars, boats, houses. Like I think you guys, even if you had the means, chose to live within your means to create experiences that were lifelong. Like that's what I think of. I think of us snowboarding. I think of us fishing. I think of us in Mexico. That was such a thing that like you guys built for us. And I would just love to have that with my family. I think you guys have been such an amazing example of how to build a legacy of love and how to build a legacy of adventure and doing things together. That's really cool. You should be really proud of that. That's not even a question. It's just buttering your bread. So consider it.
Thanks, Spence.
You guys have both done so much in your life. Obviously, career-wise, like you both have had really great opportunities and have carved a path, I think, again, from person making ice cream cones to like running the world operations for your company, which is incredible. And same with dad, like being on the construction site to now being the president of a home building company. That's incredibly impressive. What in life do you feel like you still need to do? What is like that thing or those things that you're like, you know, I've done all this, but there's this last thing. There's this other group of things that I feel like I would regret not doing or not trying.
Yeah, it's a good question. I have to think about that one. I mean, there's not like five things that jump off the top of my head. We've been very lucky and blessed.
Yeah.
I think it's just more about creating those memories, mm-hmm. more of them.
Yeah. Well, and that's like, I think you guys are in a cool position where you are closing in on retirement, obviously like 35 plus years of working what you've done. And I think when I think of that question for you guys, I think it is just more like you build this thing to enjoy it. You don't just build it and die. Like that, I think, is the part of that grind or hustle culture that's actually pretty toxic right now, which is like, you'll never stop. You'll never take your foot off the gas. And I think what you guys have done is build, put yourself in a position to now enjoy the life that you built. And I think you guys are going to really enjoy being able to like randomly travel to a show of mine or go pop out to see Justin in Chicago or whatever. Like, I think that's great. Mom, it looked like you wanted to answer.
I think I still have a big dream to write a book. I've had a lot of adversity in my life growing up and then being a cancer survivor. And I have the privilege of working with moms around the world and what I do with my job. And I think just to encourage people that life is this big, messy thing, but it's beautiful at the same time. Like it can be super hard one day and challenging and you can have adversity And then in the same day, you can have something over the moon that's just amazing and exciting. And to normalize that more, because I think in our world right now, all we see is like terrible tragedy, or we see people living like their best life. And it's all this Instagram reel of like, you know, horrible tragedy and just over the top amazingness. Reel. And so much of life is like in between and like going over those adversities and getting through them together with the people that you love. And so just being able to share like the things that I learned from the adversities in my life would maybe hopefully help someone down the road. Because I think when you're hurt becomes the way that then you can help people, then you've turned the corner and it has meaning and it brings purpose to maybe what you went through.
Yeah, so. I would love, and I peer pressure you on the daily basis to write a book, because I think you've been through so much and you have a story that I think would really impact a lot of people, between cancer survivor, adoption, the way that you were raised with, you know, maybe your dad or stuff like that. You have a lot that feels incredibly specific, but I think our specific is our universal. You know, the more that you tell your story, the more that it can touch other people.
Yeah.
And I would love that. So now the whole internet's going to peer pressure you to write a book, and it needs to happen. And the fun part is, when this book goes number one on the New York Times bestseller list, we'll have this little clip and I'll go, hey, I told you, neener, neener, neener.
Well, I don't know about that. Maybe that's just more part of like my legacy that I want to leave my family to know that they have the same, like, inside they can do it. You can, you know, and I couldn't have done any of that without dad. So, you know.
Okay. Love we're going to play a quick game. Ready?
Okay. I'm ready.
So I do this every once in a while, and I pick a couple people, and it's usually around five.
Okay.
Well, there's six of us in the family. So that just made a lot of sense. So just it's like 3 to 5 words. You can't really explain it, but just 3 to 5 words on the people, I'd say. Ready? It's going to be lightning round. Here we go.
And do we take turn? Like, give me a little more. Yeah,
I'll give you each. Okay, so it'll go dad, then you. Got it. Or we can go you, then dad. It doesn't matter. Justin, my older brother, Justin.
Challenging, loving, turning the corner.
Yeah.
Awesome kid, going to be very successful.
Funny, kind, amazing friend, and sensitive.
Mm. And like, you know, I think Justin, he's my older brother. I love him to death. We had some times there, especially as a family, that felt rocky or bumpy. Like, that's going back to what dad said is, you know, this is the part of family that I don't think a lot of people tell you, is there is the stuff that you post on Instagram, like, hey, we're all up in the mountains. And there's other times where, you know, Justin went through a lot. And that's his story to tell. I don't necessarily think that we need to like dive into that, but it was a lot for him, for our family. There's been a lot of like, what I'm really proud of him and us for all doing is like, really making an effort to heal and come together even closer. Cause I think what you were talking about, dad, with that urgency of life, is we're getting older and we're like, who cares what happened in the past? Like, let's all be as close as possible and let it be water under the bridge. And so I am so happy because I feel like my relationship with my older brother has gotten so much stronger over the last 4 or 5 years. There was a time in high school where we barely talked, you know, and that hurts. Like, that to me was something that was so tough. But when you say turn the corner, like that to me is the one that I would say is we are so proud of Justin in the last 5 to 10 years of him being like, fuck it, I'm going to make my way in this world and finding out who he is. And we're just really proud of you. We love you, buddy.
Yeah. He's an amazing person.
Yeah. Okay. Taylor, my little brother. Pizza.
Super sensitive, loving, super smart, hardworking. I mean, I think that he's just an awesome kid.
Passionate. Smart. Very kind. Intuitive. to other people's feelings. Yeah. And
he feels everybody else's feelings.
Yeah, super empathic.
Yeah, which makes him, yeah, he's just an amazing person.
Yeah. It's a great trait, but with it comes a lot of burden.
Yeah. You feel that even when we talk about the world or climate change
or his friends.
He takes it on.
He just feels everybody's pain.
Yeah, he's been that way since he was little, too.
Yes.
Just.
I'm that way, so I'm trying to help him, like, learn how to, like, what you can control or manage.
Yeah.
Like, you can't solve it because you do feel it deeply when other people are hurting, and
yeah,
it's a good thing, but it can also be a burden on yourself. And so how to manage that, just comes with time and maybe a little more maturity, but
yeah, it's been such a privilege to be his older brother, 'cause he's so smart and so funny and so, you know, just capable. And so I'm really excited to watch like what happens with Justin and him and Lexi, obviously, but like, it's really cool to become friends with your siblings. I think there's like the thing when you're younger and you can't stand each other, which is like when you're really little.
Car.
High school is interesting because you're at very different parts of your life. Like there was a lot of stuff that Justin told me that I was like, oh, okay. And then I would go through it. I'm like, oh shit, he was right. Or like there was times where I was like, wow, he's being so disrespectful to the parents. And now I've heard Justin's side of the story. I'm like, oh, I think he's right. You know, that's the interesting part of being an adult is you really get to see all sides. And I've really enjoyed having a friend in Taylor. He's such a good friend. Mm. He's such a good brother. All right. Mm-hmm. What about the foof, Lexi Crandall?
Stubborn, awesome, confident, beautiful.
Yeah.
A gift.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do find till I look at you with talented. She's so talented.
Multi-talented.
Creative, funny, like wicked funny. Gorgeous.
Keep going.
Gorgeous and very thoughtful.
Yeah. The foof is such a, by the way, we have a million nicknames for my little sister. Foo-foo, the foof, foofalopolis. It continues and gets more egregious as you go along. But I think, a gift is really the best word. Like she is so funny and fun. And like when I think of, being somewhere that is like safe and warm and cozy, I think of being at home around Christmas time.
Yeah.
And it's like playing games with Foof just in her bed. She has this massive projector set up. She's so talented. Like she's the only one of us that's handy. I find that so funny.
No, she is. She can
all
put
of
together
us are
anything.
Maybe Justin a little bit. He's a little bit more like tinkery.
Too.
Maybe Taylor's too. Okay, so maybe I'm the only non-tinkery person. But Lexi, like, will build this crazy shit, and then she's, like, baking, and she's so good with her hands. She's very tactile, which is super interesting. Like, I am – the second I have to open a wrapper, I feel very frustrated. But she
you
is –
You destroyed so many cereal boxes. Can I just add that in there?
Yeah, everyone else can just open the tab. I would just rip it in half.
And you'd open the pantry like – Spencer. Oh my gosh.
We know who opened the Doritos. I think we could all go on for an hour about Lexi, so I'm not going to allow it. I'm going to keep her humble and we're going to cut it off here.
So the foo-foo comes from her Chinese name is Yongfu.
Yeah.
Yeah. And foo means blessing.
I didn't know that.
It does. In Chinese, it's
so foo-foo is blessing, blessing.
Yeah, so she's a double
she's
blessing.
She's a double blessing. Mm-hmm. Okay,
and,
well.
And her nanny nicknamed her foo-foo.
Right, it was foo-foo and dwa-dwa in the same crib. Right.
Yes.
And then, the foo.
And it's stuck and it's never going away, so she's going to have to deal with it.
Whether or not she likes it or not, I keep telling her that she needs to be a rapper and she needs to go by Young Foo. But that's just me. Young Blessing is also now acceptable. I love all of that. It has been such a privilege to talk to you guys. One of my favorite parts of the show is that I ask what I consider just big, weird, interesting questions. You know, the premise of why are we here is kind of like, why are we here in the universe? And you guys have helped inform that so much. So I think it's interesting to do it here with you.
I'm
so
nervous.
We have the cards. There are wrong answers and I'm looking to cancel you, Sherry.
Great.
So here we go.
Bring it on.
I have no idea what
Bring
the third
it on,
one is.
Sir.
And I'd love to hear, obviously, both your answers. So you can, we'll switch off who goes first and we'll just, you know, keep it light. There are wrong answers and you will be graded. What is something that you don't give yourself enough credit for? Mom, we'll start with you.
Gosh, that's a hard question.
I know. That's the point.
What I don't give myself enough credit for. Maybe that I did pour enough into you guys that you're all doing well. Like that I had something maybe a little more to do with that than just, you know, random.
You're the reason. That's I don't think if there's ever somebody that doesn't get enough credit, it's you for sure. I mean, the person, the glue of our family for sure is you. You know, I think we, because we were so spoiled and stuff, I think that is one of our regrets as kids, is not telling you guys. And then of course you, Mom, especially, you know, taking time out of your career. But now that I'm older, I'm like, I can't imagine taking, you know, 10 or whatever years out of music just to raise a family. But you did that. Like, you made a huge sacrifice because you love to work, and not to work, you love what you do. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge sacrifice for you. And you definitely don't get enough credit in our family. We all love you a whole lot.
Thank you. Being a mom's the best job I've ever had.
Well, Dad, you can answer before I cry. Go ahead.
I'm never satisfied with anything, mm-hmm. which is not a good thing, but I mean, it's a good thing, but it's not, again, finding that, mm-hmm. that middle ground. But nothing I ever do, I'm satisfied with. I always think I could do it better, faster. I never celebrate anything in milestones. So probably, that's probably a weakness I should work on.
I would agree with you out of love, which is, yes. And I get that from you.
Yeah.
And I think especially the Crandall men in our family, we all look up to you so much. So we've all taken so much of your identity and who you are. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we're, that it's a double-edged sword, right? It's exactly the same conversation as the like privilege or having things or opportunity. It is this, I'm never satisfied, which is my adversity and my pusher and my motor mm-hmm. and my drive. But then, you know, what is it all worth if you're not celebrating and stuff? So I think something like this is fun, and it is a celebration in and of itself that like you do have a kid or multiple kids. Well, you do not Ward. You do have multiple kids that are doing, that are living their dreams. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think either one of you get enough credit for the amount of work that you have put into lay this foundation that is not like, it's not a year. It's now 30 years almost mm-hmm. in the making of creating this life and opportunity for your kids. So if you won't celebrate, we will celebrate for you. And I think that's something we don't do as much as a family, probably, that we could is.
I'd like to.
Yeah. Well, the tough part is I remember I remember a 50th birthday party that was canceled because Dad was like, it's just not who I am. And which is such a, it's not this false modesty. You're so humble. And I think that's part of it too. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a part of you that like, this is me being an armchair therapist or psychiatrist. That's like, well, I don't deserve that. Cause there's always something to be done. I could always beat that. Or like, it was good. But so this is me just telling you, you are more than enough and you've done more than enough for this family. We love you and we celebrate you. And we're so thankful for everything that you've done. Both of you guys for sure.
Oh, I appreciate that. And I also just don't like the attention.
I know. Meanwhile, you're on a podcast lit up with lights and microphones. And,
yes, exactly.
What is one of the best pieces of advice that you've ever been given?
I think it's live life with urgency, which I said before. I think for us too, it's like, and for young kids, just live within your means. Don't try to be something you're not. And for us, I think, you know, you learn the lessons as you grow up. Debt is the devil and can cause so many problems in life. So just be who you are and live within your means, and don't be ashamed of who you are, what you believe in. If somebody doesn't like it, they're not your friends. They're not somebody you want in your life anyway. So don't try to be something you're not, and you know, live within your means, whatever those are. Don't try to keep up with the Joneses. Don't try to becomes, you know, something on it or create an image that, you know, that's not who you really are. Just be true and honest to who you are, and your real friends will surround you.
I think that's great. I love that. That's a great piece of advice.
I think I was told to live in grace, but it has to start with giving yourself grace first. And I think I really struggled with perfectionism, you know, being a gymnast and trying to do all things perfect all the time. And I didn't give myself grace. And if you don't give yourself grace, it's hard to give other people grace.
Yeah.
And so when I started to really believe that and not be scared to show people like that you don't have it all together. Because honestly, people don't really relate to the people who think or try and come across as perfect and like, oh, no, we have no problems. It's all together. When you're real and genuine and authentic with people, it gives other people permission to be authentic with you. And I think it starts with grace.
I think that's amazing. That's something I really struggle with is giving myself grace for sure. I have the rusty and the Sherry combination of perfectionist and never satisfied, which is why you guys have the life that you have. And it's, I do think it should be celebrated, but in unhealth, which we all have things in health and unhealth, in unhealth, it is so hard because you're so hard on yourself to move forward and to do better. So I'm working on that. I will take that piece of advice to the heart. But I do think you've gotten a lot better at that, actually. I think, you, in the last couple of years, I've seen you like ease up on yourself, which I think is great. Like, I think you were really hard on yourself. Like when we were in high school, for some reason, I remember a little bit of the like, am I doing this right? It was a lot. You had four kids in these periods of life that were very important. And I think it's been fun to watch you be like, yeah, I'm really good at this. And like, I am also human, and I've watched some of that perfectionism like dissolve in a really healthy way. I think just from an outsider perspective, you should hear that because it's cool.
Thanks. I've been working on
it. It's a hard thing to do. I think that should be celebrated. That's really cool.
Thank you.
What is a detail about your story that very few people know? What is a detail about your story that very few people know?
Really know. That's a tough one. But very few people know.
Yeah.
I mean, probably the story about my dad dying early.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's really informed a lot about who you are, which is to me crazy how good of a dad you are to not have an example, you know, growing up. That to me seems like almost impossible. It doesn't add up that you would. Or maybe it's back to that adversity thing. You're like, shit, I didn't have a dad, so I want to be the best dad ever for my kids. And when I tell people that, they are always shocked, like, whoa, I didn't know that about your dad. Yeah.
I mean, that's probably, and that we came from, you know, very simple means and, you know, grew up, I don't want to say poor because we weren't poor, but we definitely didn't have a life of privilege.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how many people know that. Side of my story, but
yeah, well,
I don't run around telling
hey, Rusty Crandall, my dad died and I didn't have a lot as a kid,
right?
Mom,
yeah. Well, I live sort of a very public life with what I do, and so part of me sharing my story is to give other people encouragement. So, I think more about just maybe adversity in my childhood with parents being divorced and kind of back and forth and some things with my biological dad that were really difficult and hard. But also the fact that a lot of people don't know that my dad, who I say my dad, is really my stepdad, who came into my life when I was 8 years old. And just the change that that made to our family. And honestly, one of the reasons why I knew that I could love an adopted child because I actually felt like I was adopted.
Oh, wow.
Because of the love that he gave me. So not not a whole lot of people know that because they just assume. And he's 6'5", so they're always like, why are you so little? And then I forget, and my sister is like almost 6 feet tall, and they're like, you're so tiny, and she's so tall. And but then I forget myself that, oh, yeah, that's because, you know.
Yeah. I've never heard you say it that way. Like, I feel like I was adopted. That makes so much sense to me why there's just no hesitation, because for you, it's like, I don't care if we're biologically related. This person's my dad. The same thing with Ed, although you were an adult. Like, you both had people come in your life, and they're just your family. And it doesn't matter where you're from or if we have the same DNA. Like, what a silly thing to define family by.
Well, it just made a lot of sense to me because someone that really, I mean, he married my mom who had 3 kids.
Yeah.
What in the world? Like, thank you, Chuck.
Especially Dennis. My uncle Dennis was a menace as a kid.
He was a little wild. He still is. But we just felt so loved from the very first time we met him. And so when people would say, are you worried? Like, will you be able to love this child like you love your 3 boys? I thought that was just such a really rude question because I was like, well, what do you mean? Of course I can. I never thought any differently because I so,
you know, felt that.
I felt that.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Who is it in your life that you could never leave out of an acceptance speech? You're getting the award for best human. You're given a 2-minute slot. Who's the person you cannot leave out of your speech?
You.
Yeah. Each other.
My mom and my wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Well,
that's easy.
That's easy.
That was an easy one.
Do you have a mission statement, a mantra, a sentence or a group of sentences or something that you repeat or live by? Mission statement.
I do not. I've never had one. It was never like something in our family or something I grew up with. Some people do. So I was really never introduced to that concept, but I guess, you know, in the back of my head, I was, you know, there was always goals and objectives and what I'm trying to become, but I never really grew up with a mantra or a saying or a scripture or anything in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple things. When I was young and involved in gymnastics, I had a coach that I just loved, and he had this big poster on the wall. And it was lead, follow, or get out of the way. Mm. And when I was probably like in 6th grade, and he said, you know, I want you to know that you're a leader and people are looking to you to lead this team. Mm-hmm. I was young, like 12. So you need to lead, and there will be people who need to follow. And then people who can't lead or follow, they need to get out of the way so that your team can be successful. Mm. And I think in many ways that really informed like how I lead as a leader now. So that was one. And then I do have a verse that I adopted when I was in college, a Bible verse that, and it's Proverbs 3:5-6. And it basically says, lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways, acknowledge him and he will direct your path. And because I'm a figure out, like, I got to know, and I'm a, I have all this useless information in my head. I love facts and all of that. But so much of the time when you don't get it, I try and figure it out on myself and it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So lean not on my own understanding has been really important in a lot of things that I think that we've faced.
I think that's beautiful. Yeah. I struggle with the same thing. I really want to know the answers. I started a podcast because of it, and I'm asking you questions. And it's sometimes you have to just lean into the, I don't know.
You know?
And what's, even if I did, what's it going to change? You know, that's part of that for me. This is an interesting question. What has been your favorite age and why?
Ooh.
Again, there's no wrong answers, just really big, weird questions.
And I look back, I don't really have like a specific age. I think right now is my favorite time.
Yeah.
You know, life, we've worked hard for what we have, and our kids are becoming adults. It's fun to watch that. You know, we've been through lots of adversity in our life and overcome it. And I don't know, we're at a pretty good place right now.
Yeah.
We're blessed.
Absolutely. Mom goes, 11. I do not like where I am.
No, I think there's so much truth to that.
When I was 14, my hair was perfect.
Well, I had more friends.
Less wrinkles, a little skinnier, whatever. No, that's... I loved, like, my 30s when you guys were little and
we were, like, toddlers and stuff.
Well, toddler and then, like, the elementary age. I call it the cruise control years where, like, I don't have to change your diaper and you can brush your own teeth and all that. And you're just having so much fun. And, like, we had four kids and a cute little puppy and you're just, like, full of sports and activities. And I loved that as a mom. But right now, I mean, I think I have my own philosophy about women. And I think I just am trying to encourage, like, middle-aged women. You get sort of left behind in society. Like, there's the, you know, cute 20-year-old college girls and then the young mom with the family. And then, you know, then they say, oh, the hot mom, she's still in shape and she's still this and her kids are doing that. And then there's the silence of... people just don't give a lot of people middle-aged, like, I think the credit. They have so much to offer before you become the cute old grandma. So I want to, like, empower other women that are of this age to say, you have so much to offer the world.
Yeah.
You've learned so much in all these things that you've done and become. Use that to then pour into other people.
Yeah.
So I think right now is, like, great. I love where we are. I love our age. And I'm not afraid of getting older because it's such a privilege to get old.
Yeah. I think you should be really proud of the work that you do in that sphere, in that realm of, like, what you said is I've never thought about it that way, but that's very true. In society, I think we weirdly hold value, like, young girl who, like, you know, is killing it. And then the young mom and then the mom with, like, the teens. And then for some reason.
Yeah.
That, like, middle-aged adult woman is maybe, like, looked over or whatever, which is such a shame. If there's anybody in our society that we should be looking to for advice or for their story, I feel like it's those people. And you do a great job of telling those stories through your work and through what you do at MOPS. And
thanks.
Definitely empowering those people as well. And I think you do a really great job at that. And that, I think, is something you'll be remembered for, is giving a voice to voiceless people in your whole life, but especially in that realm of people. That's really cool.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Again, just buttering your guys' bread today.
Awesome.
Don't like that question. Don't like that question. You know, with the parents, I want to make sure that they're... What do you think your superpower is?
That's
hard. Take your humble hat off.
We both
take,
like,
your
oh,
perfectionist sash off. The gloves of not wanting to brag off. What do you think your superpower is?
I think I love people well.
I agree.
I love people. I think you can find something great about everybody and celebrate that and love them well. So
that's why I think everyone in our family likes to spend time with you. Because I think you're weirdly the only person in our family that sees – I can't speak for them, actually. So I will – this is a big assumption, but I think you see the good in somebody first. That's not something that's normal. Like, I think Dad, me, Taylor, Justin, and Lexi are probably a little bit more, you know – and don't take this as, like, a negative thing, but, like, more, like, realist slash pessimist or, like – yeah, we'll see. Like, I'm not going to just give this person the smile or the time of day or whatever. And that's something you're really great at, which spending time with you is so special because it unlocks this thing in me of, like, oh, yeah, maybe people are better than I think they are. And it always works out for you. Somehow, like, treating people that way, to me, I'd be like, oh, she'll get burned. But it doesn't. And it's a cool thing that I've watched in your life that you, like, treat people really well. You give them the benefit of the doubt. You find the good in them, and it, like, comes back to pay dividends in the end. It's really interesting.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her ability to love and hospitality on the meter. Yeah. It's like at 11. It just stays at 11.
We're about to blow.
It's looking for 12 and there isn't one. Yeah.
Thanks,
she'll
guys.
Find a squirrel just like, look at you, you fluffy little guy. Love him to death.
Yeah.
Dad, superpower?
I don't like talking about
it. I know. That's why I told you to take off the things.
This is so uncomfortable. Ah.
I think some people think I'm quiet, but I think I'm a really good listener. Mm. I don't need to be the center of attention. I'd rather listen to other people's stories and pour into them. What else? I think I like to quietly be generous to other people.
Yeah, I think that is so your superpower.
It is.
There was never a time where you would even tell us, and I'd be like, wait, what? How is that person? Whatever. And it's like, we just wanted to take care of them. We just wanted to bless them. That's so cool. That is something I want to do in my life for sure, is be the quiet blesser. And that's really, really cool. I think something that you touched on of being like quiet and being more of a listener that my friends always used to say, like we're over at your house and we're having this big conversation and everyone's talking and your dad's kicking it. He's sitting back. And then all of a sudden there'd just be like this wisdom gem that would come out of nowhere. Like, well, this. And be like, what the hell? And then you go back to watching TV or something. You're like, wait, he was here the whole time and just absorbed thought, let it stew. And then just like really well thought out thought. And I think you're really great at that. Is you're not necessarily going to be the guy who's like, you know, it's such an interesting combo, the two of you, because you are, which is me, which if I want to find a conclusion, I will literally talk to myself. All right, Spencer. So what are we hungry for? Well, we had tacos for lunch, so we don't want tacos for dinner. And that's you as well. You could do it to a wall and I could do it to a wall and be very happy. But you're a quiet processor. And I think that is your superpower. That and the quiet generosity thing's really cool.
Which is funny, is it? With the kids too, like you guys would come ask me a question or ask permission, and I process internally quietly and sometimes for days. They were like, "Is he going to answer?" And then day later,
to me, Mom,
he still hasn't answered.
That
he
was our biggest.
Anything.
We'd all talk about that. Like, "Hey, Dad, can I have a sleepover?" Silence. Silence. An hour later. So the sleepover. Where are we at? Meanwhile, Mom's like, "Well, let's call the parents. So let's talk about it." That's my mom voice.
Was that your impression of me?
Yes, it is. We kind of already covered that.
Oddly sounded like Minnie Mouse, which I'm not sure I do.
So it's always interesting because we cover so much of these questions. I think the question I want to end on is, if you could ask God one question, what would that be?
That's such a deep, deep question.
I mean, the obvious one is, you know, why do you take people early?
Mm-hmm.
Or why do people in certain parts of the world live such difficult lives? We're so blessed, you know, where we live here. Like, it's just not fair. So why that? You know, why don't you reveal your plan for our lives to us? You know, so those are, you know, pretty obvious, typical ones, but they're the ones that most people are like, I can't figure out.
Yeah, that's exactly the stuff I think of is, why can't we know? Why, you know, I'm incredibly confused by, and we've had these conversations so many times, especially as a family, like, why is there bad in a world where if he is who he says he is, or if he's the God of the Bible, especially of Christianity, why does he, you know, allow is kind of a, the word that comes to mind, like why allow what's happening in Afghanistan to happen right now? Mm-hmm. Why is he allowing that earthquake to kill 2,000 people in Haiti if he is also all loving and all knowing? And it's a very confusing relationship in my head of he has a plan and he knows and he's good, yet there's something like the Holocaust that was allowed to happen or whatever. And it's so hard to wrestle with. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Mom?
I was speaking at a conference one time, and one of the keynote speakers with me, he was a gentleman who had lost his wife, daughter, and mom in a car accident. And he used this prop on stage, which was like this giant oil painting, but he had part of it covered with like a this beautiful like satin piece of cloth. And over in the corner, all you could see was this like dead tree. And it was surrounded with like rocks, and it looked like stormy clouds, and it looked very bleak. Mm-hmm. And he said, that has been my life until the last 2 years. And then he took the cloth off, and it was this whole like gorgeous painting, and it had animals and a stream and all these things. And oddly, the tree didn't look out of place when it was in the big picture.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where I say faith comes in, because I don't have all the answers. Like, and because I like answers, like I want to seek that, I want to know. But I think that's part of the faith, is I just don't know. So I'm comfortable saying, like, God is God and I am not. And I don't understand it, because sometimes what feels really wrong and the feels that I have for other people around the world and I don't understand, I have to trust, or my faith allows me to trust, that it's part of this bigger, beautiful picture that doesn't make sense to me. But somehow, because he is the creator of the universe, it makes sense to him. And you know, people say, well, what would you ask God when you get to heaven or those things? I'm not sure we're really going to care at that point. Maybe. But it just, it strengthens my faith, or maybe I've simplified my faith to say, I don't have all the answers, but I trust that that dead tree somehow makes sense in the bigger picture.
Yeah. My idea of heaven is, you know, the Bible talks about a peace beyond understanding.
Yes.
And that if I die and I open my eyes and I'm in some pearly gate cloud situation, that my questioning, if I could give up one thing, because my questioning is probably actually ego. It's like, I want to know, because I want to be smart and I want to have the answers and I want control. And that's the one thing that I would pray for, that if there is some sort of heaven, that that is eradicated in me. Like, yeah, you don't have to know all the answers. I think that's a beautiful way to put it. I've never heard that oil painting example.
It stuck with me forever, and it almost in that moment changed some things that I was really harboring that didn't feel fair, or I didn't understand. And part of faith is like, you're not going to understand. And I think for me, it was an ego thing. Like, I can figure this out because I'm capable. But I'm not maybe meant to know all that. So I have to just trust and do what I'm being asked to do and know that it has bigger meaning. So
I love that.
Yeah. We all as humans think we're so smart. But in the big scheme of, you know, God, the universe, like our brains are so small, we can't comprehend all of that.
Yeah.
So you just have to accept it.
Well, I'm going to keep trying to do that.
it's a lot
harder said than done. It's, you guys know my like faith journey. It's so rooted in probably just control. I want to know. I feel like it's unfair that we can't know. And so that's so much of my reservation to go in or out. And something I love about you guys is, as we were kids, you gave us a base faith, rhetoric and structure and like way to view the world. But as we've all gotten older, in a beautiful way, we've all adapted and shifted and asked questions. And you should be really proud that, like, although you believe something and you have an incredible conviction, which I think is something you should be proud of, you've allowed your kids to go outside of that conviction, to double down on that conviction, to abandon it, to come back to it, to mold their own. And that's something, especially in today's world, that I don't see a lot. I see a lot of parents saying, well, if you do that, then, you know, we obviously did something wrong. And I think what you guys are saying is, you know, we'd love for you to join us in this because we believe it has certain repercussions or a certain life for you if you do. But we also love that you ask those questions, and that's part of what we raised you to do. And I think that's really cool, is that you guys have given us the ability to be authentically ourselves, even if that's outside of what you do or what you want or what you've seen the world to be. And that's really different. And I think that's unique to our family. And I think that's powerful. And it's actually a really big example of love to the fullest is conditional love is I love you because you do these things. Unconditional love is I just love you and I will love you through and with any of the baggage or questioning or opposing viewpoints that we have politically, religiously, whatever's going on in the world. Our family actually had to adopt a like no debate rule because we were all, you know, a couple of years ago, we were getting into these crazy conversations, but they were always with love and curiosity. And you guys really have like paved the way for that. That's really interesting. And I think very different, especially in today's society. Yeah.
And on the faith side, I mean, it's only natural and human that people ask all these questions, right?
Yeah.
You have to. That's part of growing up. It's part of your own. You got to find your own faith. You have to have your own journey. And asking those questions is normal and healthy. And but, you know, there's risk as a parent. You're like, I don't know where it's going to lead.
Yeah.
But there's lots of risk in being a parent. And so it's just you have to let them go and you have to let them find their own way and answer their own questions.
I think I used to be scared of questions, even, you know, fairly recently that if you were questioning this, like maybe I did something wrong.
Mm.
That is super ego on my part to think that I should have any, like it's good to have questions. And so I've come more to the realization that your questioning would only lead to a deeper sense of your conviction or your faith. And I believe that God loves you more than I do, which is hard to imagine because I love you so very much, right? But I believe that the God of the universe loves you more. And so he cares deeply for you. And he's not afraid or like upset that you're questioning that. I think that's just part of your growing and your own faith journey. So again, faith isn't something that you're going to have black and white, like, yes, yes, yes. Like you're still going to be like, really? I don't get this.
Yeah.
I don't think we're supposed to. So I'm not afraid of questions anymore. I'm more like, it's almost made my faith more solid because of it.
Yeah.
And then just the letting go as a mom, it's hard to let go because you're like, oh, I just want to make sure you're okay. but I have to let go and let you be you and let you do your own journey and trust that, God loves you more than I do.
Yeah. Well, you guys have done such a great job of that. Like, I would not be where I am today without both you guys. I just want to take a big chance just publicly to say, I love you. I'm so grateful for you guys. You know, if somebody likes this podcast or my music or anything that I've done, it is directly because of you guys and the way that you raised me and the way that you love me and allow me to do what I do. So I love you guys very much. Thanks for coming on my podcast. I know that's probably like a weird or different ask from your kid, but I thought it'd be a great opportunity to like show people who I am a little bit more. And I think we did that today. I think people will know us better because of this. And I think your stories are so inspirational and your hurt is somebody else's healing. And I think you guys offered a lot of cool wisdom today. Mm-hmm. I just freaking love you. I'm so glad you live in Nashville now.
Aww.
And we'll go golfing soon, even though we'll all hit it in the woods and curse at each other.
I love you.
It's a privilege to be your parent, and we love you, and we're so proud of you.
Thank you. Love you guys.
Love you.
Spencer. Love you, love you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, that's awesome. Another episode of Why Are We Here? That was with my parents. That was so fun. Thank you guys for being here. And make sure to subscribe and like and share it with your friends and your enemies and your orthodontist and all the people. We love you. Talk to you soon. Why Are We Here?